listener production. Hi, Sasha Barbagat here. Welcome to The Briefing. Donald Trump and Joe Biden have now secured their respective parties' presidential nomination for the November US election. Biden will partner with Vice President Kamala Harris for the second election in succession. But who will be Donald Trump's running mate? Most pundits are pointing to South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem.
She's this prominent, a younger woman. She's 53, I think. She's very glamorous.
In the second half of The Briefing today, we find out who Kristi Noem is and why Trump is favouring her out of a field of contenders. Before that, Antoinette Latouf is here with the headlines. It is Wednesday, the 27th of March.
Thanks, Sasha, and g'day, everyone. So Julian Assange has been granted a reprieve in his fight against extradition to the US. So what does this mean? Well, two judges in London's High Court have ruled they need more information before deciding on whether to grant the WikiLeaks founder's appeal. And a quick reminder, the charges Assange is facing relate to material published on his WikiLeaks website that date back to 2010. And this information detailed war crimes committed by US forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. The judges have given the US 3 weeks to provide assurances on 3 of 9 points included in the judgment against Assange.
That's right. And that includes assuring the court that he won't face the death penalty if he is extradited to the US, that he is not prejudiced at trial because of his nationality, and that he can rely on the First Amendment in the US Constitution that protects free speech. Now, Assange's lawyer, Jennifer Robinson, had this to say following the ruling.
The US is being asked 5 years after seeking this extradition request to provide these diplomatic assurances to remedy what we say are these fatal flaws in the US case goes to show just how problematic this request is.
Now, if it can't provide these assurances, the judges say Assange will be granted leave to appeal. His wife, Stella Assange, who is also a lawyer, has criticised the decision.
What the courts have done have been to invite a political intervention from the United States to send a letter saying it's all okay. I find this astounding.
So, Antoinette, while the next 3 weeks play out, the 52-year-old Australian who is facing 18 criminal charges in the US will remain in Belmarsh prison.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to say good news because this has been a really drawn-out process, but not all appeal avenues are lost. His legal team has already flagged it will appeal to the European Court of Human Rights, of which the UK is a signatory, which would likely delay all of this further. So the US argues that these WikiLeaks revelations imperiled the lives of their agents and that there was no excuse for Assange's criminality. Whereas Assange's many supporters hail him as anti-establishment and that he's just being persecuted for being a journalist, for exposing US wrongdoing and alleged war crimes. And we know journalism is about truth-telling, even if it makes governments uncomfortable.
A desperate search is continuing in icy conditions for 6 construction workers missing after a major bridge collapsed in the US city of Baltimore. The Francis Scott Key Bridge fell into the water within minutes after it was hit by a cargo ship in the early hours of Monday morning local time. The ship suffered a power issue and issued a distress call moments before the crash, but was travelling too quickly to change course, according to officials. 8 construction workers were on the bridge at the time of the collapse. 2 have been pulled alive from the water. The remaining 6 are still unaccounted for.
Yeah, this is a terrible and developing story. Luckily, though, there were no cars driving over the bridge at the time.
Personnel on board the ship were able to alert the Maryland Department of Transportation that they had lost control of their vessel, as you all know and reported. As a result, local authorities were able to close the bridge to traffic before the bridge was struck, which undoubtedly saved lives.
That is the slurry speech of President Joe Biden there. In his update, Biden also promised his government would pay the entire cost to rebuild the bridge, saying they won't wait to determine if the shipping company is liable for the damages. And so this collapse has cut off one of America's biggest ports, and the army has been called in, which will help lead the removal process of the debris. Australia could move to holding federal elections every 4 years instead of every three, which is what we currently have. That's if the big banks get their way. So they're the ones driving the idea at this stage, and it was discussed at a banking summit yesterday, with the bosses of the big four arguing longer elected terms in Canberra would provide businesses with more stability and predictability, which would foster economic growth. Both PM Anthony Albanese and opposition leader Peter Dutton are supportive of the idea. However, and this is a big however, Sasha, any change to election times would need Australia to hold another referendum.
Yeah, I think both leaders, whether they're in power or not, would be pretty shy to pull the trigger on another referendum so close to The Voice. I guess I understand where the banks are coming from on this topic. Three years does feel like a short amount of time. I can definitely see merit in having a four-year cycle.
I totally understand. 3 years doesn't seem like a huge amount of time. Heaps of election promises, not a huge time to execute, or even if they do start to execute, if a new government is in power, they can flip that. On the point of referendums, only 8 of Australia's 45 referendums were a yes, so it would unlikely get up. I'm also not that excited about doing what the big four banks want. I reckon they have enough power, enough profitability that any significant changes to the country and any need for a referendum probably doesn't need to be at the request of the big four.
Oh, it's a beautiful sound, that. One of the most controversial movie props of our time has sold at auction for an eye-watering price. I'm talking, of course, about the iconic floating door from James Cameron's Titanic movie. Now, it fetched $1,096,570 Australian dollars at this auction, and now one lucky punter can test the theory of whether Jack and Rose could have both survived.
I don't understand why it's such a controversial movie prop. Maybe it's a really talked about movie prop, and I loved your use of the word eye-watering. I was like, pun intended.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think of that.
You might remember the director himself tried to put talk to rest that Leo DiCaprio's Jack could also have survived the sinking of the ship if Kate Winslet's Rose just moved over a little bit. And honestly, I don't buy that theory. I just reckon Jack was a bit of a dud. If he could have just hoisted himself up, there was plenty of room for him. In those scenarios, it's survival of the fittest. Jack was really cute. Not that smart. He had to go.
I still think, though, that think of the ocean. I'm no scientist, but it's buoyant. You've got this wooden door. It's bobbing around. You watch them struggle for a few minutes, and then Jack goes, you know what? Rose needs to survive this. I'm going to take the fall on this one. I don't think they both could have fit on there.
All I know is I would have nudged the love of my life off the door to survive.
Well,
that's the kind of romantic I am.
Fair. Hey, fair. But a 2022 forensic analysis, which was undertaken by James Cameron himself, because he wanted to put this talk to rest, it did find that there were a number of factors. And like I mentioned, the weight of the pair and the buoyancy of the water and the freezing conditions meant that there was no way both could have rested on the door. So I think the debate's over.
And if you are as invested in the door as Sasha, you probably just need a couple of million dollars next time it's up for auction.
Mm-hmm. Antoinette, thanks so much for being here for the headlines today. Next up is our deep dive into who Donald Trump's likely running mate will be in the upcoming US election. This year's US presidential election is shaping up to be a repeat of the bitter 2020 race. Donald Trump has all but secured the nomination for the Republican Party, while Joe Biden will almost definitely be running again for the Democrats. Biden will likely share his ticket with Vice President Kamala Harris. But Trump is yet to announce who his running mate will be. Most experts are predicting it'll be the current governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem. So who is she, and what do we know about her politics? Adam Crichton is the US correspondent for the Australian newspaper based in Washington, D.C., and he joins me now. Adam, thanks for being here. Who is Kristi Noem?
Well, look, she's fascinating. She's been on the US political scene for quite a while, actually. She started a career in the State House of South Dakota, which is a tiny little state in kind of northwest of the US. I don't think it even has a million people. So it's quite rural, very small. She was in the state parliament there, if you like, for a bit. And then she was elected to Congress for South Dakota in 2010. And she stayed there for 4 terms, which is pretty impressive. So she was elected 4 times. And then she'd had enough of that in 2018. And she decided she wanted to go home and run for governor. And she won that too. So she's won two terms now as governor of tiny South Dakota. But although her state's tiny, she's built up this huge national profile. So she's quite well known here on the political scene. That's partly because, or at least mainly I would say, is because during COVID, she was one of the states that refused to introduce any form of lockdown or mandate at all, which at the time was quite controversial, as most states in the US did. You know, she was criticized a lot for that, and so she got prominence for that. But then it kind of worked out okay for her because most studies now say that, you know, many of the lockdowns were an overreaction and very damaging for schools and children and so forth. And so she's kind of looking better in hindsight now for not locking down. So now she's kind of in the running for VP, I guess, because she's this kind of prominent, a younger woman. She's 53, I think. She's very glamorous. I mean, quite funnily, she recently did this strange thing last week. Well, at least it was strange for the political class. She did this weird ad for a dentist in Texas, which she'd visited to fix her smile.
What?
And, yeah, so, I mean, A, she didn't go to a dentist in South Dakota, and B, it's kind of strange to be, you know, to be governor of a state and literally doing an infomercial for a dentistry. And she said, yeah, you know, the dentist is great. I go there all the time. He's fixed my smile. Look at my teeth. There were lots of images. I think some images of her in the dental chair. And anyway, so that seemed a bit weird. And she got sued, actually, by some company that said it was too close to an advertisement and that she shouldn't be using her office as governor, you know, to advertise dentists. But that's not hurt her at all in the political betting markets for VP. And in fact, I was just reading a piece in the New York Times that suggested that she did it on purpose to improve her stocks with Donald Trump because he likes women to be attractive and feminine and glamorous. And she's certainly all those things. You know, she's pretty much the top candidate, I would say, for VP. But that's not to say she'll get it.
Do her politics match up with Trump's, as in, is she conservative, obviously, but kind of like out there in terms of like the things that she says? And when I say a good running mate, you know, does she match him or does she compliment him where she's maybe more measured or has is a bit more political than Trump is?
Yeah, look, I think she compliments him. I mean, I kind of have an unorthodox view of Trump himself. I think he's very much a centrist who doesn't really have strong beliefs. You know, take abortion, for instance. So she's very anti-abortion. She has been for a long time. But Trump really has not given a view because he knows how divisive it is, the politics of it. So he tries to skirt around the issue. Because I'm sure Trump personally is not anti-abortion. I mean, he lived in New York as a real estate developer for a long time, right? I mean, he's not exactly an evangelical, but he needs those people. So that's the problem for him, I think. So look, I think she's more of a traditional conservative. I mean, remember when she was governor, refusing to lock down South Dakota, she was going against his advice as president. So she was quite a COVID extremist, I would say, a bit like Ron DeSantis was in Florida. And so she's very strong on kind of traditional liberty, you know, free speech, but she's also very anti-abortion. I think she compliments him because, you know, she's not going to kind of get in his way. I mean, he's a much more dominant political figure. I don't think she's going to try to change his mind on any particular policy question, but she looks great. And I think he probably wants a woman as VP. So I think she ticks those boxes.
Why do you think he wants a woman?
Well, I think it's increasingly become the standard for the president and the VP to be, you know, to be one person from each sex. It's been like that for, you know, for at least a decade or so now. The first time around he chose Pence. But I think that was, I think in hindsight, he probably regrets choosing Pence. And indeed, Pence himself last week came out and said that he won't be voting for Trump, which is quite interesting. Trump support is particularly low amongst women. That's a real weak point for his campaign. So I think he probably thinks that if there's a woman as his VP candidate, he's going to have a, you know, kind of a bit better chance amongst that group, that very large group.
Tell us about the other candidates for VP. It's not locked in yet. Who else is on the ticket and could get into that position?
It's probably worth noting that Trump didn't pick Pence back in 2016 until about July. So he might not make a decision for another couple of months yet. He's been teasing about it a lot in public, but he says there's a shortlist in his head, but he won't say who's on it. At first, everyone thought that this guy Vivek Ramaswamy might be chosen. So he was a contender for the Republican nomination, but he pulled out after the first primary and then backed Trump very fulsomely. So everyone thought that might have been a play to be the VP pick, but Trump ruled him out just last week. So he said, "I really like Vivek, but he's not going to be my VP choice. I want him in my cabinet instead. That was interesting. So that leaves people like Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina. He's a black senator there who also ran for the Republican nomination and pulled out pretty early. I don't think he's going to choose him, and the betting markets don't either. And I think it goes to the fact that I think he's going to want a female there. That leaves this other lady who's a congresswoman from New York, Elise Stefanik. She's a real up-and-comer. She's very pro-Trump. She's in the third highest leadership position in the Republican Congress, in the lower house, the House of Reps. And, yeah, she's also got a national profile. When the Harvard president resigned last year, remember over the anti-Semitism stuff, she was the congresswoman that kind of triggered that. She was the one asking the questions in the hearing. So who else? I mean, so there's a possibility of Texas Governor Greg Abbott, although I don't know whether he would want the job, but Trump recently said out loud that he was such a great governor that he'd think about him for VP or something like that.
Right.
It was just a throwaway comment. Yeah, they're probably the prominent ones, I would say.
We've seen Nikki Haley's name bandied about. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, look, I mean, it is. And, you know, maybe I should have mentioned her, but they're just there's so much animus between the two of them through that primary, because Trump was furious that she wouldn't pull out kind of after New Hampshire. And indeed, she stayed in for another couple of months, which obviously drained a lot of his financial resources in terms of campaigning. We said to campaign against her rather than against Joe Biden. But look, it is possible. And some of his political advisors would definitely be recommending it, basically saying swallow your pride and pick her, because there's a significant chunk of Republicans, say 10-15%, which is a lot, who will not vote for Trump and they like her. So the argument will be that, you know, if she's on the ticket, then, you know, maybe you'll get them back.
The other name that I saw that raised my eyebrows was Tucker Carlson, who's obviously the former Fox News host. Why is his name coming into this conversation at all?
Yeah, look, I think it's a bit silly, but, yeah, certainly his name does come into the conversation. I mean, there's no way Tucker would take the job, surely. You know, he'd certainly get paid a lot less than he currently does with his extremely highly remunerated. And I think he's probably more influential in that position anyway as a, you know, as a journalist broadcaster. But he comes into the mix because he's perceived as being, you know, very pro-Trump, and to the extent that Trump is grateful for that support, that he might choose him as VP running mate. You know, Tucker, of course, is very popular amongst a certain segment of Republicans, but he's very, very unpopular amongst everyone else. So I don't know how politically wise that would be.
Look, in Australia, we don't have, obviously we have deputy prime ministers once you kind of get into the role, but the whole idea of a running mate doesn't really exist here. How important is this role, and how important will the person who Trump chooses to be in it become?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think this is a more important decision than it usually is, because the role of vice president in the US traditionally is often mocked as kind of a irrelevant appendage to the president. They don't have much. Well, they don't have any executive power, I don't think. There's it's all with the president. But because of Trump's age, he's, I think, 77. Say he wins, he can't go a third time. Mm. So whoever is VP is going to be in a very good position to run for president in 2028. And, you know, I mean, to be cynical, there's always a possibility that Trump dies or something in office. You can't rule that out, right, because he's old. I mean, he seems pretty healthy, but he is 77 and he'll be 80 in his third year of any second term. And so if that happened, then the vice president is president automatically.
Yeah.
So I think whoever is Trump's vice president is more powerful than the usual vice president.
Look, before we let you go, Adam, I guess I wanted to check the pulse of the US. You live there. You report for The Australian from the US. What is the mood like as we kind of start to edge closer to the campaign officially getting underway and the November vote? I mean, it felt like it was all kind of going along pretty well as the primaries and the caucuses were going on. It's kind of fallen into a bit of a lull now. How is everyone feeling, and what are your predictions for the year ahead?
Yeah, well, I think it's just, you know, people are coming around to the, you know, the unfortunate idea that there is going to be a rematch between Trump and Biden. And I think, you know, surveys in the US show 60-70% of Americans did not want that rematch. They thought either that Biden might say, look, you know, I've had a good run and I'm going to step aside for someone else. No, that didn't happen. And on the Republican side, people thought, you know, that Trump would not win it, because, you know, it's hard to believe now, but when you go back to his launch in November 22, he was far down the poll in terms of likelihood of winning. And yet he's proven everyone wrong, and he's obviously soared back to the top, and he's all but got the nomination. So barring a health event with either Biden or Trump, it's happening. I mean, as a journalist, you know, it's kind of a boring story. It's the same vote again. It's like there's no one new. And everyone knows both candidates so well that, you know, that makes it kind of boring as well. So, you know, poor me.
Well, I'm sure you'll find some sort of enjoyment out of it as the months roll on. Adam Crichton, thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. That is all for this episode. Before you go, though, I do have a favour to ask you. We would love if you could help us get The Briefing in the ears of more people. And the best way you can help is by sharing us with someone you know. We appreciate you being here with us and for your support. I'm Sasha Barber-Gatt. Thanks for listening.
Listener.